What's going on, Numbers fam? Thanks for pressing play on the second installment of our series in partnership with Community Energy Project. Throughout the series, we'll be discussing the many different resources available to the community in pursuit of changing our relationship with energy, our environment, and our bills. In this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Charity Fain, the Executive Director of CEP, and Program Director, Sherry Vilmark. So, it doesn't matter if you're a homeowner or a renter, there are definitely some ways to save some coin, especially coming into this holiday season. Right? See, I knew we'd find something to click on. Anyway, stay tuned, and I promise I won't be the only one that learned something today. Sherry and Charity, thank you for joining me today as we discuss the great work that CEP is doing right now. So traditionally, when we talk about energy solutions, people think of solar power. What kinds of advancements have been made in the energy sector that maybe folks don't know about or haven't recognized?
I think that there are a lot of classic solutions out there that are still really wonderful ways to still engage with energy efficiency and energy solutions, such as insulation. And a lot of the solutions are actually going to lie in the accessibility of what exists. But there are some fun advancements that I'm happy to talk about, such as Community Solar is a new program. It's a way for people to be able to sign up for solar without having panels on their roof. You can actually sign up to be part of a large array out in a field somewhere, and everybody's invested in it and gets discounts on their electric bills.
Wow.
So there's opportunities like that, which I'd be happy to expand upon if you wanted to know more. There's some technology that's out there, such as heat pumps. This is a way of really efficiently heating or cooling a home, because instead of just creating new energy, instead of creating heat from scratch, a heat pump can take existing heat, say from outside your home, and bring it into your home. So it's a really efficient way to heat your home in the winter, or to cool it by taking heat out of your home and pushing it outside.
Wow.
Then there's smart technology that's out there. You have thermostats, like Nest thermostats are like a really popular smart appliance that can look at things like energy use across the entire grid and can adjust your thermostat accordingly, or can look at things like, if I use energy at midnight, that's going to be better for the environment than using energy at 6 o'clock at night when all my neighbors are using energy. So maybe my water heater can heat water at those hours. So there's ways to get a lot of the same results with using less energy and using energy more smartly.
That's amazing. I feel like I've heard some of these phrases and some of this technology mm-hmm. before, but didn't really understand how accessible it was. And you did mention accessibility in the beginning of your answer. What are the steps? What are some of the things that are being done right now to increase accessibility mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, demystify some of these next steps for us as a community?
Well, one of the ways, the Community Solar Program is one of the ways that CEP has been really involved in accessibility around renewable energy. So our role within the Community Solar Program is as the low-income facilitator, because there's a requirement, a mandate, that 10% of the program has to be made accessible to low-income populations. And so accessibility was really the core of what we were getting at. Well, how do you define low-income? What kind of outreach is done? What kind of risks and rewards are involved? Recognizing that when you talk about low-income people, you talk about people who are being defined by their lack of resources. So how can we have a realistic program that people are going to want to engage in, that's going to help them be a part of the environmental movement and the green economy, help them have utility bill resilience in the face of, you know, the climate crisis that we have? How can we have something that's really truly desirable? Because I think a lot of times people with good intent can create programs that are not really good for the communities they're trying to serve. And then it's, oh, this group is not interested in energy efficiency. This group isn't interested in solar. And I'm like, well, if you make a good program, maybe they'll be interested.
Right.
Maybe you're the problem.
And I also think, you know, when you talk about accessibility, like Oregon Community Solar's one great new program that had accessibility at its core. But we try to look at, we look at how we better serve the clients that CEP works with energy efficiency upgrades, access to solar, also home repairs, you know, those barriers that people have, right, that stop. Money is one, right? You brought up a little bit earlier that people felt like they couldn't afford it. Affordability is a problem. So I try to look at often when I'm talking in policy worlds, right? There's like the policy and funding that comes, and then how do we make programs accessible when money is a barrier? Mm-hmm. So our programs are free to anyone who comes to us. It, you know, we want them to be free of charge. And on a policy level, we look at, you know, how some of these programs are designed, are set up in a way that these traditional energy efficiency programs are designed in a way where you people might think, oh, if I buy a heat pump, I get a discount. It's called an incentive, right? And that comes off the price. But if you don't have money to pay for the item, that discount doesn't do you any good, right? So I keep going everywhere and saying, the reality is, if we really want to address climate change, and we really want to retrofit every single family home, which we do need to do to reach climate goals, it's going to have to be free, free to large populations in this country, especially communities who have been left behind traditionally. And in some places, that's low income. In some places, that's communities of color, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color. Like, I firmly believe there's programs that just need to provide that for free.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do that.
So even in hearing that the programs are free, there's always this, not always, in some cases, there's this additional barrier that this kind of, it's clearly, it's more or less defined by the processes involved.
Yes.
In applying. And,
yes.
And what does it feel like when members of our community are going and trying to receive resources from the county or from the state? They're often met with, you know, procedures that just, at the end of the day, does it really pay off? Does this person have time to take off so much time away from their job to earn money, be able to apply for these services that are indeed free? Could you talk a little bit about the process?
Yeah, I'll start a little bit and then Sherry can go. We actually talk about this a lot. We feel strongly that that can, should not be a barrier. So like a lot of our programs, because of funding, you have to income qualify, right? You have to be under a certain income.
Right.
And a lot of programs make you fill out all kinds of forms to prove it. We don't. We make you sign a document saying, yes, I attest that this is my income. That's the only proof you have to do to get a CEP service. Because we don't want you to have to, you know, find 20 documents, or maybe you don't have an income.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, undocumented workers might not have a provable income, right? Also, especially for the programs where we're in people's houses, we go to your house. So we can do a phone screen to do some of the first questions, if that's the way that's the easiest way for someone to get in touch with us. And then we'll send somebody out to your house. So, you know, that can be done at your kitchen table when it's your convenience. So we feel strongly as an organization that the barriers to application should be on us to solve. Like, we'll go in the evenings or on the weekends to do our events. Like, that's our problem to solve. That shouldn't be a burden on the person who's trying to access services they deserve.
That's awesome. Yeah.
To add to that, just an example, one of the things that CEP provides is we provide workshops to folks. So this is a lot of barrier removal. It's, I have a cold home, I need to weatherize it. Great. We will provide, you don't know how to do that, we'll provide you the knowledge. You don't have the supplies, we'll provide you the supplies. You don't, you know, you work during the day, we'll be on evenings and weekends. You don't speak English, we'll have it interpreted into another language. You aren't comfortable walking into city and government buildings on the 14th floor past everybody in suits. You know, we're coming to your center. We're coming to your community. We're coming to the places you're comfortable, to your turf. And so taking these kinds of approaches makes it so that accessibility is such a broad topic, because it also includes comfort and even knowing what's even going on. How am I even supposed to know that this event is happening? Well, we work with through relationships with others that have relationships with different communities, and we inform them. And then word gets passed around in the ways that people are comfortable hearing about things.
This is amazing. I'm extremely encouraged just in hearing the amount of thought put into the barriers, seriously, and eliminating those. That's amazing. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine. We were talking about some of the services that the station was extending to the community, especially small businesses. We wanted to make sure that we were able to get some commercials for them in rotation. And so if you, even, you know, community organizers, if you have an event, let us know, fill out this Google form, and let's get it on out there. And people were still using whatever ways they felt most comfortable to get the information to us. But I'm like, but there's this form, and it's just it's one button on the bottom of the website. You hit that button, I promise you, everything you need to tell us, it's a click away. You just, you know, select and multiple choice. And it took a conversation with a friend of mine to say, you got to understand, there are some people that just don't like filling out forms. Just something that simple. Mm-hmm. Just having to fill out a form is something where they feel like they can fail it, like it's possibly a test of some sort. And I was like, whoa, okay, all right.
Yeah, so multiple ways, you just need multiple ways. Like, we serve a lot of seniors, and there are connectivity issues. Like, they don't want to fill out a form on a Google, right? Some of them don't even still know. Like, so just being adaptable, that's something that's really important to learn, right? That adaptability.
Are there any other areas when we talk about eliminating barriers to receiving these services? Are there any other areas or points of advice you could give to maybe someone else that's running an organization or just trying to do their part in connecting with community?
I think COVID-19 has given us some really strong examples of how large the digital divide is. So this is about access to technology. Giving workshops, which was something that we would normally give 60, 70, 80 workshops a year out in around the community, we couldn't do that with the pandemic. So being able to switch to an online format such as Zoom or Google Meets was not an immediate solution, as a lot of people don't have access to fast internet. There's technological barriers where people may, even if they had access to the internet, they wouldn't really know how to utilize it. And so we had to get very creative. I would say that barriers are something that's always coming up. We're always looking for more. And it's hard because if people aren't coming to you, you can't talk to them. So you don't know what barriers are keeping them from coming to you. So it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem when you're trying to figure it out. But what we did was we said, fine, you can call in on this number. We will print out the workshops and send it to you. And you can call in and follow along on a printed version. And we had workshops last year where half of the participants were using that option.
Wow.
Because they did not have a way to use the internet to access the workshop.
I think another barrier that is really harder in some ways to find solutions for, or easy solutions, is an education around this field, right? Like, why we're here talking today, in part, is that if people don't know about the technology, or, like, you know, you brought up, like, or just assume it's not for them, it's not for my community, it's not for like, because of all the things we've already talked about, like, people need to understand, because they have to make choices for their homes and make choices for their lives.
Right.
And, like, providing education, people are smart and people understand their own experiences, right? But if they haven't had access to the technology or access to the education around it that other communities have for years now, that becomes just a systemic barrier. So how do we break down like those narratives and increase, like tie that education to actual programs that provide the services?
I think that is a great example. That is, we're talking about generational home ownership. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking to people about how to save energy, what does efficiency look like? If you come from a background where your family's never owned homes, you've always lived in rentals, you've never had any control over what the temperature of your water heater is, or even access to touch it, you're going to be at a disadvantage automatically when these conversations start through no fault of your own. And I would say, like, being a woman too, my brother was taught a lot of repair stuff that I was not taught. That wasn't stuff that was taught to girls. And so even within a household, you can have these information gaps. And so being able to, as Charity said, people are clever. And when we give people the opportunity to have access to the same kind of information that privilege allows different groups to have access to every day, we are starting to level a playing field, because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what to ask for if you've never heard of a ductless heat pump before. You've never seen one. You don't know anybody who has one. You wouldn't even know to look it up to even begin to research it as an option.
Right. So we have to always keep in mind the actual number of Black homeowners here in Portland. But there are some steps that can be done for our renters.
Yes. There's different
weatherizations that can be done to help us save money on our energy bills. Could we talk about that briefly? Or not so briefly, but can we talk about that?
We can talk a lot, as you can tell.
let's talk about that, because I want to make sure we cover that too.
Yes.
Before we jump into the home ownership.
Sherry, you go ahead. You can talk about renters a lot.
The weatherization workshops that we focused on are catered to, in many ways, renters. Because we recognize that renters are going to be the people who have the least control, the least decision-making power over their homes. And so what we talk about are what we call temporary or semi-permanent solutions. So plastic window kits, air sealing, is really what we're focused on. So air sealing is focused on keeping the drafts out. And this not only works in the winter when it's cold, but it works in the summer as well. We have a do-it-yourself cooling workshop, and it's how to keep your home cool without air conditioning. A lot of renters can't have air conditioning. Window units are forbidden in many types of multifamily housing situations. So when we had experience earlier with the heat dome in June, which was fatal to around 100 Oregonians, in that single weekend, these are situations that are becoming reality for frontline communities, for the people most vulnerable. And so we're looking at, how can you control light coming into your home? If you got a sheet, I'll tell you how to use that sheet. You go to Goodwill, go get a sheet or an old one or whatever, how to use that sheet, how to keep your home cooler. And we give away, again, like the same thing. You will teach you how to do it, and we'll give you the supplies we talk about. So people get box fans for free, as well as some air sealing. And, when we're talking about climate resilience and smoke inhalation, because we were just one wind shift away from being smothered in smoke. Yeah. This summer, like last year. And so there's a lot that renters can do, a lot more than people may realize, that isn't going to get them in trouble with their landlord, then that they can take down when they move out, or they can work with their landlord to say, hey, I've started this. We work with landlords as well, multifamily housing, to say, hey, can we bring this workshop to all of your residents? Can they install these window kits, a door weather stripping? Is that okay with you? Can you have your maintenance help install for people who might not be physically able to do it? They may have physical barriers. So renters are often left out of the discussion. I'm really glad you brought them up.
Oh, as a renter, it was important that I brought that up. and you're right. I mean, while we aren't in a situation where we can't have a window unit, the way some of the newer windows are now, it's harder to have a window unit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely understand that. That's great.
And can you afford to run the window unit even if you had it?
And how many window units do you have to run?
To cool the place.
Right, exactly. Right.
Okay, so can we speak to how much of a difference this is making financially for Black homeowners? Like, how much do they stand to gain by pursuing energy upgrades and things like this? How much are we losing right now by ignoring this?
Oh gosh, I don't even know if I've ever quantified numbers out like that level. Like, people will save money for sure, right, on their energy bills. I think it's also important to think about what you gain. Mm-hmm. Comfortability in your home, indoor air quality in your home, right? We have clients right now who are still using oil burning furnaces that we're upgrading to electric heat pumps. So like, they missed a whole technology.
Right.
Like, there was a city effort, you know, to get rid of those, and they're still there in a lot of Black homes.
Wow.
So they missed a whole upgrade. So we're kind of leapfrogging some technology by getting people into heat pumps. So that will give you, again, what's great about them is you get the heat and the AC.
Right.
Right. So I'm sure, Sherry, you might have numbers or might have some ideas on like average. There are definitely numbers out there on like what people say your average savings is. But unfortunately, I never have those on the top of my head.
In the workshops, so these are the smallest scale things that people can do. People are showing they save like an average of about $35 a month in the heating season. And that range can go from a few dollars to, I've seen it as high as $150. We usually have a few people who save $150 a month.
Wow.
And then you have some people who turned on the heat for the first time because it was a possibility. So sometimes people's bills didn't go up, but what happened was, well, hey, I no longer live in a strainer. So now I can turn on heat and it's worthwhile because I am so much more comfortable. And I think that, you know, coming back again to the climate resiliency thing, when we had ice storms, you know, power like goes out and things like that. If you have an efficient home, you are going to be in a safe situation much longer if the power goes out in an extreme weather event.
Right.
And that, those kinds of things of like, what are we losing? It's like, well, there could be serious potential health outcomes to people living in inefficient homes.
So I think a great overarching answer is just an increase in your quality of life, period.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, especially right now when Portland is getting hotter and hotter,
yeah,
to be able to have like, you know, an efficient air conditioning unit that's cooling your whole house is really just going to become a bigger and bigger need.
And you can pair programs together, right? So if you have air conditioning and community solar, your solar bills are going to make your energy bills go down in the summer when you would be using more air conditioning. So there's a lot of places too where once you get connected to some of these programs, you're connected to other programs and other programs, they can form like kind of like little puzzle pieces to form a much nicer picture of what your daily life can be like.
Gotcha.
You know, and I think what some clients have said to us, and I, feeling like you're connected to the climate solutions, feeling like you're part of the solutions to climate change is actually really important to the people who come to us and want to be part of the program. So that you feel that like in your home, yes, for you personally, you are getting a safer, cleaner home, right? Air quality is better, but you're also doing something by having those changes in your house that is impacting for a positive climate change.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And when you look at the studies that ask people, what are your priorities? Do you believe in the climate crisis? Where would you rank that in importance? People of color, low income, and women are your biggest believers in wanting to see change. And one thing we've done is asked like environmental groups, why aren't you engaging your biggest believers? I think that's a really important question. And this is something that CEP is looking to be like, we want to engage people in this way, because there's a lot of pride to be had and there's a lot of comfort to be had in like being a recognized part of the solution. I'm going to emphasize recognized because, you know what, taking the bus is part of the solution. Walking is part of the solution. Yeah. Low-income people do stuff that's part of the solution all the time, right. But it's not recognized because it's not a Tesla. You know, driving an electric car is great, but why is that better than taking the bus or living, frankly, in an apartment?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so there's so many things that aren't recognized that are part of the movement, but being part of a celebrated element, efficiency and renewable energy is a wonderful opportunity for people.
All right. Well, let's now delve into the program itself. All right. CEP has an energy program specifically for Black homeowners. How did this program come about?
So, you know, the Portland Clean Energy Fund was passed, there was a ballot measure a couple of years ago that passed was passed to establish the Portland Clean Energy Fund. And we were a little bit involved in that. There were other organizations that really were the leaders in that. And then we became involved in just like, you know, helping to them design some of the rules, just giving feedback. There's a committee that, and Sam talked to you all about that. Mm-hmm. But we knew we would apply, right? And when we thought about, you know, we serve right now around 200 households a year through our existing programs before this this project started. And when we looked at, you know, what would we do for our Portland Clean Energy Fund grant? Like, how do we want to frame this project? How do we want to set the parameters? I felt really strongly we should just go back to like, what is the core of CEP? So Community Energy Project was started about just over 40 years ago in the Albina neighborhood in people's living rooms, doing these weatherization workshops. So, you know, a lot of Black folks started this program and sit around in their living rooms and designed the project when it first started. And we're really kind of the seed that started what CEP is today. And we have, you know, been serving and working in the community for a long time. And some of the frustrations we've had over the years is that there's always more need than we have funding to serve. Right? There's always limitations. Like, there's, you know, you might be able to spend $100 in a house or $1,000 in a house. And with PSEF, it allowed a lot of us nonprofits to dream bigger and to think about what's the big need that we've not been able to serve. And so we really wanted to go in and not do 200 year homes year one, smaller number of homes, but a lot more in each home.
Okay.
And I just wanted to go back to where the roots of the organization were. Who are the people that have been with CEP all along? Who are the communities we've been serving all along? And then, like, you know, the two managers on this program are themselves Black, and they felt really strongly they wanted to serve this community as a first round of our grant. So, you know, it was really looking at our core and who we serve traditionally and allowing this first year opportunity to be for the homes that we've worked with for so long. And then, you know, we pulled up our database of like how many people we've served. And over like the past 5 years, we had about 175 Black homeowners that we've served.
Wow.
And been in and out of their houses doing all kinds of work. So, you know, we have long relationships with some homeowners. My program director's been in those houses, has strong ties, right? And he wanted to have this first year really where we have an opportunity to serve in a bigger, deeper way. And that's how we made that decision. And then like how we do a lot of things, you know, we wanted this to be something we did together with homeowners. So we do this, what's called a home energy score, where we can go out to a house and assess it and find out, you know, you get a score on how efficient your house is. So we did those for about 100 households for free. And then we had a focus group with about 20 Black homeowners before COVID shut us down. And we just sat down with them and talked about it and let them look over the report and answered questions and asked them what they wanted in their house. Because it's not enough what, you know, CEP thinks somebody should have in their house. It's like, what does the homeowner want?
Yeah.
Or where do they need more information? Or, you know, how do they want to live in their house? How do they want to pass the house down to the next generation? So that was a real like process with the homeowners. For PSEF, it's really important to have greenhouse gas savings. So like that was a factor, which houses had the biggest need, right? And it was just really, again, this opportunity to finally be able to go much bigger in a home and much deeper in the work that we're doing. So we were just really excited to kick off the first year and really work with people that we've been working with for so long.
While having these conversations and focusing this work within the Black community, were there any stories that they shared with you with regards to trying to pursue these type of resources previously and some of the adversity that they faced?
Honestly, I don't think there have been many opportunities for this type of work.
Gotcha.
I mean, there's been some smaller projects we've done where we have another program where we can do heat pump water heaters, like we can replace your water heater, right? And where some of the clients that we're talking about have already had that upgrade. But you know, maybe they might have contacted there's some programs at the county that people sometimes have access to. If they know about those programs, we try to refer them there. Sometimes, as you talked about, those can be a little hard to get into for folks. But nonprofits leading it, there haven't really been opportunities because there just hasn't been the funding to do this level of work before PSEF.
Okay.
And locally, any kind of energy efficiency retrograde is done by the county.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say that a lot of the clients who come to us, you know, like I said, like they've known us for so long. They trust that when one of our people come in, we're going to be upfront and honest and do good work and, you know, follow up with them. So, you know, they might feel more comfortable coming to us to get that service than they might to like a government agency.
Absolutely. The relationships are important. Takes time to build those relationships and establish trust. Very, very important. Thank you. So what are the steps to the process of this particular program?
So you mean like how do we go about doing a retrofit?
Yeah. So if someone were listening right now and they were interested in having some upgrades under their home.
So for this year, the first 20 homes, we have the houses have been selected and all the audits have been done, but
nice.
PSEF just announced their new RFP, and next year the funding will probably be double.
Wow.
Like that we're bidding on. Like
okay.
PSEF's amount was like 8 million the first year and like 50-60 million the second year. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people. If they're interested in being in our program for next year, the first step is, you know, go on our website, communityenergyproject.org, and have a look at what existing programs we have now. People can call our office at 503-284-6827 and start an intake process. Because even if you can't get into our PSEF project right now, we're still doing home repair.
Right.
So we're doing home repair. We're doing heat pump water heater replacements. Right now we have a program to do attic insulation for free. So you can call and possibly get your attic insulated for free, right? There's always criteria somebody would go over with you about whether your house is the right kind of house. You know, we have our workshops that are going to kick off on these weatherization workshops are all about to start. So the first thing is just to find out what we have available beyond this particular project, right? To see if your house or your living situation is the right fit and what's available. But calling us always works, or, you know, contacting us to do that kind of review process. Then if it's like a home, and we'll send somebody out to inspect your house. So if you really just want to know what your house is, just we'll go out and do a free home energy score for you. You can call and get that score for free, and we'll come and give you do an audit and give you a report, whether you, you know, can qualify for one of our programs or not. That's and then once that person is out there, they can help determine like what kind of services would be available. But like, as I said, you know, that process is like one-on-one with the person and is an inspection of your house, basically. And that doesn't take long, like an hour of your time, right? And then we would be able to match you with the program that fits. And then if it's in the PCF program, right, we would design a scope of work together. The homeowner always approves, right? Like, so that's a conversation with the homeowner. Here's what we think we can do. You know, what do you think? There are these the things you want. Some homeowners don't want everything. Some homeowners have needs that are beyond what we can do, right? Still, even with PCF, like some houses have things beyond what we can do. Like we can't do a kitchen upgrade, right? Like a lot of people need their kitchens upgraded. We can't do that. And then we would send contractors out. They will have a look and then start the process from there. There's also, you know, like we mentioned, a lot of our workshops that people might be good for people, especially for people who are, you know, capable of doing a lot of things themselves and like doing things themselves. Mm-hmm. There's great ways, you know, you can get resources on how to do that. We have a home advisor program too, like people who can just call us and set up a schedule with an advisor, and they'll talk to you for like 15 to 20 minutes to give you advice on like what the needs of your house is. But, you know, getting a score as a first step is always great, because like, you know, information is always useful, and knowing what's there is like the best thing, is the best place to start. So for workshops, Sherry, it's really just going online and signing up for one.
Yeah, or calling us, and then we'll tell you where they're at and how you can be connected to the service. Workshops are like probably one of the easiest ones, because it only takes a couple of hours of your day, and then you've got your supplies and you take them home. And people can call us for technical advice as well. And sometimes people will use workshops. I've got an insulation workshop that we're actually planning to record this year. And sometimes that's for folks who aren't planning to insulate their own attic, but they're having contractors coming into their home and they want to know, what's that contractor doing? Why are they doing this? People want the confidence, because when a contractor comes into your home, especially if you yourselves don't have a lot of experience in that, it's a very vulnerable place to be. And people have had a lot of, unfortunately, rough experiences with contractors, or heard about bad experiences with contractors. So some folks have literally said, I came to the workshop to hold my contractor accountable, to feel savvy. And, oh, I know what a drop soffit is. Oh, I understand why you're putting a hole in my roof. Why would you do that? So I understand how to do that. And that's a really empowering place to be when working with a contractor, especially for the first time.
Oh yeah, definitely. We've all heard the horror stories.
Right.
We really have we want to do direct installations, and we really want people to be educated.
Yeah.
Because that's like very empowering for people.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the benchmarks for this program?
Well, for this one, the main one is getting the retrofits done in the homes, right? So how many, we have a goal of doing 20 houses this first year, and that's our goal. And then for next year, we're not sure. We'll be applying with the new RFP that's coming out, but we really want to continue this and have this be a multi-year program and for it to grow. You know, we're also seeking other funding outside of the Portland Clean Energy Fund, because we really want to see, like, for climate change, we need every home retrofitted.
Yeah.
Right? Every home. And as we said earlier, like, we really believe strongly that there are communities that just, it should be free.
Yeah.
Right? Whether communities have really been left behind or left out of past programs. There's been how many billions of dollars already invested in clean energy that by design excluded people?
Right.
So it's time to take all of that money and invest it into communities who never had an opportunity. And if money is the biggest barrier, then let's eliminate that barrier.
So with the current project, you mentioned retrofitting a couple times. Could you explain what retrofitting is for those of us that have no idea?
Yeah, so we look at large weatherization. So like you might insulate your attic or insulate your walls or floor. So insulation around the frame of the house to keep it tight, right? And then we'd be looking at what are the big systems. So what furnace, how do you heat your house? So do you have an old oil furnace, like I mentioned, like getting rid of those and getting you a heat pump. We're looking at how do you heat your water? So do you need a new water heater that's a more energy efficient heat pump water heater? With that, sometimes, you know, to do some of this newer technology, you might need a new electric panel on your house.
Okay.
Or you might need a new roof on your house. Because if your roof is in really bad shape, like, you know, you need to deal with the shell and structure of the house and not just put in new technology that leaks out.
Right.
Right? So we'd be looking at a whole home approach of how do we keep the shell insulated and well, you know, weatherized, and then what are the technologies inside the house that you're using, right?
From a weatherization standpoint, does that include windows and doors, replacing those or upgrading those?
So it could, depending on the house. Okay. Those don't always really help you as much with like weatherizing as you might think, or we might do door stripping around a door, but it could have a window depending on the state of the window.
Gotcha.
Right. We've even had a few houses where we're having to possibly replace some siding. It really will depend on the house. The primary focus of PSAF is to do these energy efficiency upgrades and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So that will always be our focus.
Okay.
But there's going to be some home repair that you might need to do that, like the electric panel or, you know, like I said, the roof repair or some siding repair. Those are the main things that are the purpose of the program. Now we do try to bring in some other supplementary funds where we have it, so that like if we need extra repair funds, we're able to bring that in. Some from like the Portland Housing Bureau has some funds we can use, and then we use a lot of incentives from the Energy Trust of Oregon. They have, it's basically like the rebate system. Okay. So that like, as we're planning our projects, like try to really maximize what we can do in a house using the funding that we have available. That is PSAF at its core, but more than just PSAF.
I'm glad that you drew the distinction there and cleared it up. I asked specifically about windows because that's one of the things that we so often hear about are going to be the major steps. This is one of the things you're going to have to do. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, that means replacing every single window in the house. And immediately there's that horror of how much is this going to cost me? Am I really saving money if I'm spending this much money to replace all the windows? But then to hear that is not necessarily what needs to happen. There's a lot of misinformation out there right now. I'm sure there are different industries that would benefit from us replacing all of the siding, all of the gutters, all of the windows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And windows are something I kind of joke. I'm like, yeah, it's sometimes it is just window dressing. You come into a place and you're like, oh, my home must be really efficient because it has new windows. And sometimes that is not the case at all. So there's actually kind of interesting. One of the biggest, easiest things you can do is have your attic insulated if you're in a house. And what will happen is you have what's called stack effect. It's heat rises, hot air rises. So as hot air rises, it comes through all the gaps through your ceiling, through lighting fixtures, through the place where the wall and the ceiling meet. And you lose energy in two ways, through air. And as that air leaks out, as it rises and leaks out, guess where you need? You need replacement air. And where's it going to come from? That's where it's going to come from, your leaky windows or your fireplace or your doors. If you cut that off and all that warm air isn't flowing up and out through your ceiling and attic space, then you're going to feel less air moving through your windows and doors, for example. And then what you have too is, because hot air rises, you lay down an insulation barrier and it's like a warm sweater. It slows down the rate at which heat leaves your home. So you're going to not need as much energy to stay as warm. So this is a place where it's counterintuitive, because you don't see it. You don't, when you sit next to a drafty window, I'm not gonna lie, it's not pleasant. Having yeah. air move across your skin is something we're very sensitive to, but there's a lot of quick fixes you can do to a window that it's like, if I have a budget of $1,500, I can replace two windows, or I can insulate my entire attic and air seal around the windows and do some fixes so that I can put off replacing that while prioritizing something like an attic insulation project, for example. And there are great energy offsets and benefits to be had, so you can get discounts on insulating an attic.
Yeah. And again, you can call us to see if you qualify for free attic insulation right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
So
this is great. That was very informative. That particular breakdown of how air moves through the house. I, with this information, I'm going to be a hit at the dinner parties.
Oh, well.
You can, yeah, I should send you information. You should come to our weatherization workshop to talk about it.
Before we close, what exactly brought the two of you to this work? How did you end up here? How did you end up in this sector?
Sure, you go first. Mine is,
I guess,
a weird compliment.
I've been around for so long. I've been at CEP for 15 years, and I actually started off as a work study intern. And for me, I have always grown up low income, and I've also always been a really passionate environmentalist. And CEP was just this like rare place where the Venn diagram meets in the middle, you know, to be able to say, here's a group of people that care really deeply about folks that are always kind of thrown away, was how I felt. And I'd never heard people talk so highly about low-income folks or the communities we were serving as I did when I was an intern at CEP. And so I've stayed for so long because it's such a dynamic, interesting place to work. And we just keep growing and growing. And I love us coming into this policy world and being able to say, let's change what comes down the pipe, because we're always at the receiving end. We're like, oh, okay, we can work with this, I guess, versus being able to change minds and expand understanding of decision makers. And I'm really looking forward to us continuing to be in those space and invite new people to the table to bring more wisdom that is new to a lot of these policy making spheres. So I kind of came randomly as an assignment and then just loved it so much. I've stuck around for a decade and a half.
That's the perfect story. That the fact that you already had an interest and you were already, you know, participating in the work, and to find yourself working with the organization that is aligned with all your beliefs, is ultimately that's where we all want to end up, right? So often I'm hearing people talk about, you know, I don't see this work being done. What are we doing about this? And what are we doing about that? And my response is more 9 times out of 10, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Because if you're not doing the work, then you're not going to be able to look to the left and the right of you and see the other people that have already been in these communities doing that work for decades. That's why you have all these questions as to what's being done. It's because you're not involved. So you're unfamiliar with those that are getting the work done. So thank you for that story. That was great. Charity, how'd you end up here?
My story is totally opposite. I'm here to say you don't have to have been the environmentalist from a childhood, right? Like, my background really is weird. I grew up in small town Texas in rural area, and I went away to college in the Soviet Union and like worked in the former Soviet Union for about 15 years after the fall of the Soviet Union, really looking at building communities, right? Building civil society or like nonprofit groups locally to work in the part of the world where there hadn't been opportunity to participate in the political process, right? So we did programs to train journalists. We trained women how to run for office. We did election monitoring. It was broadly called like democracy development. And, you know, as like a young 20-year-old, you're bright-eyed and optimistic. And the more I did that, the more I felt like a fraud. Like, who was I as this American abroad talking about democracy when our own country was kind of falling apart?
Got you.
And the more you start to examine, like, just and educate yourself on, like, what's going on in your own country, right? And, like, the disparities across race and class, and I just didn't want to do that anymore. I felt like illegitimate, and I was living in Kyrgyzstan in Central Asia, and left there and moved to Portland, and I really wanted to work in a community I lived in and not always be the foreigner.
Gotcha.
So I've spent a lot of time trying to build that and listen and observe. And I came to CEP because I wanted to be at a place that wasn't just talk. I'd done a lot of policy work in the past, and I wanted a place that went into people's houses. That was like the biggest thing to me, that really made a difference in somebody's life personally. And it wasn't just talking about changes on a policy level or long-term changes that might take 20 years and never happen. So I really liked that CEP really makes a change and it's immediate. And I had never heard the term weatherization. You see in Texas, nobody weatherizes anything. We all saw that this last year, right?
Right.
Air conditioners, no one thought it. Like, I knew nothing. I had never, you know, I studied international politics. I knew something of international climate policy, but I really knew nothing. I had to learn all this. I had to learn all these terms. So sometimes if you ask me the technical stuff, I still don't know it. I make Sherry answer or somebody else on my team answer. Right. But like that can't be a barrier to me, my own insecurity about talking about the technical language. The technical language itself can be a barrier.
Yeah.
Right? The newness of it all can be a barrier. So just talk and learn. And that's what I had to do through this job. To be an advocate. And now, you know, I have two little kids and I want a world that they can inherit that's not burning down. Mm-hmm. So like I really feel this work in a way that I didn't feel other work in the past. And I really like that we focus on frontline communities, that we're really looking at communities that did not have access and how do we destroy the barriers to access.
While you may not have had the climate justice experience in the background there, your sense of community obviously is what has driven you to this place. And it's amazing. The work that you guys are doing right now is just amazing work. And I'm really, really encouraged and happy with the possibility of the people that will be introduced to these concepts. And can make these conversations more commonplace in our community. So thank you both tremendously for the time today. I'm looking forward to sharing this with the rest of our community. Thank you.
Thanks for creating the space for us. Yeah.
Absolutely.